Hi everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. Quick disclaimer, since we do have a guest and we had to utilize the teleconference function on the Anchor app, we did experience some technical difficulties and you may notice a few delays in the audio throughout this episode, but worry not, the content is still there. So I just wanted to open this episode with the spirit of gratitude as I thank you for your patience and understanding with the episode. That being said, I do hope you enjoy. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Catch Some Z's. It's your host, Z here. And I'm very excited about today's episode because I do believe I am hosting the first guest of the season. A very good friend of mine, near and dear to my heart. And I would like to introduce you all to my friend, Clark. Hi, Clark.
Praise belongs to God, woman of God. How's he blessing you? How you doing? How you doing, though?
I'm doing well, Clark. How are you?
Amen. I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful. I'm very excited to be here. I've been, I mean, well, to whoever, whomever's listening, I've been like asking her about this for like months, ever since Kara did it. I'm like, I want to do one, So, yeah.
Well, you're here now, and I am happy to have you. So let us not waste any time. We are going to get right into this episode. Clark and I like to say that when we're having our deep conversations, we like to say that we are going to drill down into the minutia. And that's on Murray Krugman. So let us get into it. So, Clark, you've been keeping up pretty much for the most part with this season, as have been my listeners. And that was a fun sentence to say. And the theme of this season is the self. We're exploring, what makes us who we are and how who we are, what does that look like in the world, to ourselves, all of just all the really good things. So this week's, or rather this episode's quote is a James Baldwin quote that I found on the interwebs. And I'm going to read it for us now, and then we'll go from there. So the quote is, "It took many years of vomiting up all the filth I'd been taught about myself and half believed before I was able to walk on this earth as though I had a right to be here."
Cool, Basha.
And
Oh, I've been through
yeah,
that.
it's certainly a powerful moment. And those of you familiar with James Baldwin's work, his writing, he talks very much, well, no, he talks a lot about his upbringing in the 20th century United States. For a while, I believe he told a story about how he didn't know that his blackness was an issue. He was about, I want to say, somewhere between the ages of 4 and 7. He didn't know his blackness was an issue as it relates to white people. Because he had a white elementary school teacher who was very caring, very loving, very nurturing. And then he went out into the world and, saw people getting lynched, saw rights, being taken away, being barred from, black people in the country, and then kind of was like, oh, okay. And that essentially set the stage for, the rest of his life, the rest of his work, and how we know him, as well as him being, gay and a very prominent public figure as well. So I read this quote and I'm definitely taken aback. So I am, when I first saw it, I said, whoa, out loud, because A lot of people, depending on who you ask, they feel as though different aspects of what makes them unique, are being attacked in different ways, or at the very least aren't on the forefront, aren't mainstream, aren't uplifted. So after having read that quote, Clark, what are your thoughts, your feelings on it? How does Clark feel about this James Baldwin quote?
interesting question. well, first of all, I'm not famous or anything, but thanks for having me.
Of course, yeah. So how about that? How about you introduce yourself to the people
Oh
and
yeah.
then you can answer that question? That's
Okay.
my bad.
Oh no, it's all good. Hey everybody. my name is Clark Smith. I'm 23 years old. I'm turning 24 next month, praise God. I have known Zaniah for maybe like going on 11 years now, without, sharing too much. We grew up in the same church, the same middle school, high school, went to the same college ultimately. So this is one of my best friends ever. And who am I? I'm Zaniah's
Period.
friend. Okay. what I think about that quote is I can totally relate to that. It definitely took a well, really a serious conversation with somebody who meant something to me, somebody whose opinion I trusted to start thinking or believing that I had a right to do or say or be who I was, or really just acknowledging or realizing the fact that I was not walking in my right to be who I was or say and do whatever I felt. So I as far as that quote goes, I would say I pretty closely relate to its, central theme, That's basically it. This is a really wordy response, right? Saying a whole lot of nothing, though.
No, no, you're saying a whole lot of something, my friend.
Okay.
Okay, so the reason I'm also super excited to have you here, Clark, for this particular episode, as far as the overall theme of season three goes, is because I've told you before, and those of you who know me and or know the both of us, you know that Clark is one of my favorite individuals
Oh.
on the planet, period. And no, but for good reason, because as far as men go, Clark is the most wholesome. He's the smartest one, and he's probably the cutest one as well too.
Okay.
So he's got a lot working for him.
Okay.
But I can no, I'm being serious. And I can have very good, very thoughtful conversations with Clark in a way that I can't really do with people in general, but definitely when it comes to guys. And sometimes Clark and I just talk about, the things that, especially when we were in college, I would tease him, but also be real about, girls would ask me like, oh, what's Clark? What's he got going on?
Goodness gracious.
And I would, it's not that I'm like a hater. It's just, I would just prefer my good friend to not have his time wasted by hussies. And it was very frequently, it's just Clark's gonna he's gonna deal with a certain caliber of person, period.
Okay.
And the people who were asking me questions simply were not of said caliber.
We still don't know their
Anyway.
identities, though. Years later, we still don't know who it
And it's okay because it's not even important.
was.
But
Okay.
what is important is I think very highly of Clark. But Clark is here to speak for himself. So I want to know, Clark, how do you perceive yourself? Like, what do you think of you? And maybe that's a loaded question, but I mean, I just want to know, like, what are your some of your like, just what do you think of yourself? Or even if that, like, if the answer you give me now is different from an answer you would have given me like a year ago, 3 years ago, 10 years ago. Yeah, that's what I want to know. How do you perceive yourself?
Well, I don't know what the fuck I would have said 10 years ago, bro. I don't know what I would have said then. How do I view myself? I definitely, I would say I perceive myself as Clark, as arrogant as that sounds. I really think of like my own like first name as like an adjective sometimes. And that sounds extremely arrogant, but look, here's what I think. I'm gonna be laughing this whole time. I'm sorry. As you know.
No, apologize. We're here to have a good time.
Okay, yeah, and I also just giggle when I'm uncomfortable, but anyway, I would say I perceive myself as an individualist. I really value individuality, uniqueness, originality, and being your own person and thinking for yourself. I definitely place a high amount of emphasis on that, and also on just being different, you know, because, you know, growing up, I was definitely not singled out, but, you know, people would tell me I'm an oddball, you know, Clark, you're a little bit weird. And you know what? They were right. And so now it's the thing I've embraced. But apart from that, I would say I would characterize myself as, you know, compassionate. I really value compassion a whole lot, definitely, because I think, you know, caring about other people is how, that's what makes the world go around. That's what, you know, helps the human race to fucking survive. You know, that's really the basis of morality. Do you care about other people, you know, the way you've been instructed to by the Lord? But apart from that, I would say I think I'm a pretty self-responsible person, as in, you know, I have high expectations for myself. And, you know, I don't like to not live up to those expectations, which maybe that's a little bit harmful at times. But let's see, individualistic, compassionate, responsible. Yeah, I think that's enough. I sort of don't like, I don't like to, I mean, you should, you know, think highly of yourself, and you should assign positive attributes to yourself. But I sometimes am very wary of doing that because it makes me feel like I'm being a little bit too, I don't know, fucking airheaded. You know what I mean? I don't want to come off airheaded. Mm-hmm. But that's how I would say I view myself, to answer your question. And I'm very blessed to say that I'm surrounded by a lot of people like yourself who have very positive views of me. Like, I'm very blessed to say I don't run into a whole lot of people who don't like me. You know, a lot of people, like Zaniya just said, do me as a nice person, as a smart person, as good looking. And I'm very appreciative of that. I don't take it for granted at all. You know, I definitely enjoy it. So there you have it, you know.
Thank you. Okay. I like it. You think of yourself as an adjective. Reminds me of a Beyonce. So, okay. Can't say that I disagree. Right. So you touched upon it a little bit in your answer just now and in the beginning. My follow-up question was going to be, how do you think others perceive you? So you already said that growing up, people said that you were an oddball or weird. Mm-hmm. And now it's, you know, handsome, positive, smart, all of the good things. So how do you, like, you know, I guess that is a change from, you know, before versus now, but what would you say are the more consistent, I guess, observations of who Clark is from other people who are not?
Well,
Clark?
Weird never went away. You know, most people, most people, on top of having very, you know, positive views about me, like the ones I described, they would say that I'm a little unique. I guess I'm somewhat, like, you know, I guess quirky. No, really, like, half the time it's my sense of humor. Like, I don't be paying attention to shit. I mean, that's not true. I am paying attention to things, but I'm paying attention to, you know, everything but what the average person should be. So it's like, you know, I guess my sense of humor and the way I respond to certain questions and just the way I behave, I guess, is a little bit, you know, confusing for people from what I hear them say to me about me. So, I mean, weird has definitely been, you know, what's a good word? A longstanding sort of evaluation of me. But I don't mind that at all. You mm-hmm. know, I've sort of come to view it as, like, well, a good thing, but also a superpower. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, anybody who knows me knows that I really love Prince. I really love Missy Elliott. You know, who else do I really like? Prince, again. Janet. Oh, love Janet. And also, well, various artists who are known to be weird, who are known to, you know, their gimmick back at their heyday was being different from everybody else. You know, when I see Prince and when I see, you know, who, like, I guess, you know, Khalees or whomever else, and they have colorful hair and they don't like to fucking listen to anybody. And they're always, you know, posing these impossible questions to the world about society through their lyrics. I feel very seen, you know, they're real individualists. So, you know, I guess weird is like a less than positive connotation, but, you know, maybe just one who is willing to be himself and no one else is a more positive connotation. I hope I'm stringing these sentences together in an okay way. I hope I don't sound like I'm rambling, you know, but
I'm following, and I do believe that our listeners are more than capable.
Okay, I hope so. Shit.
Of understanding your eloquence. So You touched upon some of your musicians that you're a fan of, and for the reasons that you are. And I mean, I have like a list of questions to ask you, but you're kind of answering them, which
That's
is
okay.
fine.
Freestyle
No, of course, but I want you to talk a little bit more about some of your just, no, you said that
some,
already. That's
okay.
different. So, okay, so the other day on
Yes.
Twitter, you
Oh shit.
described Azalea Banks
Oh
as
Oh shit.
you described Azalea Banks as, you know, a hip hop sea witch, an evil sea
Yeah.
witch,
She is.
in a
Yeah.
positive way though, you know, in the fact that she's the only one who's doing what
Hell
she's
yeah, she
doing.
is.
And that ties into you and you being a fan of hers and how you know, she does things completely different than the average rapper, female or
Yeah.
otherwise. And that makes you a fan of hers. So one of the things that makes you a fan
Of
of
course.
hers. Do you get any heat for being an Azalea Banks
Hell
fan?
no. I mean, oh, this is what a can of worms. First of all, when you said like on Twitter the other day, I was like, oh shit, God. I mean, because I mean, I say a lot of things on Twitter, and I mean each and every last one of them. I mean all of them. I meant that shit 100% if I said it. But I know I'm not necessarily always saying things everybody's gonna agree with. But anyway, I mean, no, I don't catch any heat for liking her. You know, I think I have every right to listen to and enjoy whomever I do. And the reason that we all enjoy the artists we do is because we relate to them and we see ourselves in them. And that's completely natural. And you know, she's a total weirdo and I love that shit. I love how weird and funny she is. She's extremely funny, you know, and she, I mean, that's really it. And also just very talented. I also enjoy her music a lot. And I just, because I like a lot of older styles of music. She was definitely how I fell in love with the house genre anyway. But I will say, I don't think I've ever really caught too much heat for any like particular view I have espoused on a social media platform. I've always just been scared that I eventually would. You know what I mean? I definitely have, you know, a large fear, you know, yeah, around being disagreed with. Well, not even that, just around conflict. I'm not into, you know, fighting and arguing with people, you know what I mean? Like it's I've been trying to sort of grow into myself in the past few years and kind of become more comfortable with being myself and allowing myself to state freely what I believe and doing whatever it is I want to do without really caring too much about how the outside world perceives me, because really I grew up as a total people pleaser who was, you know, not very high in self-esteem, you know, and also very high in self-consciousness and just not good at dealing with the prospect of, you know, not everybody is going to like you. So I try, you know, sort of bust myself out of that every day a little bit. Well, not recently, but you know, in the past. So I'll be like, you know, I need to say exactly what's on my heart right now, because if I don't, then I'm allowing myself to slip back into my old people pleasing ways. But at the same time, it's like, all right, maybe I don't need to say this. Maybe I'm allowed to believe this, but I don't need to say it out loud. So that's the constant sort of, you know, internal debate that's happening all the time. You know, not that it matters, it's not important, but you know, since you asked, yeah, that definitely happens a lot. Yeah, I hope I didn't answer too many questions at once, you know.
No, that was perfect because it's a great segue into some more deeper, I guess,
Sure.
conversation.
Sure.
The Twitter platform was a segue more so into the real world as far as you know, you again, you've already touched upon, you know, being a weirdo and loving it. And you touched upon having very unique qualities like you're
Okay.
Clark, period. And no one else is.
I'd agree.
So I've been I likewise, I have been having a lot of conversations with myself, as I often do, about, you know, what does it mean to, what is it, well, what does it really mean to like be who you are in every area, every space? And I've shared with you know, little snippets of this and that. I've been, I don't want to say I'm having trouble, but I'm more so just trying to identify what is it that really makes me who I am, right? So I asked you, how do you perceive yourself? And like I can answer that question, but it's going to take me a little bit longer to find the right words. I'll probably have to draw from examples as opposed to just being able to give you some adjectives. I do agree with, you know, I also look at my name as an adjective. And you know, all arrogance intended. But at the same time, you know, I've been recognizing that in different areas, I show up differently and not on purpose. Like it's less about like it used to be about me trying to appeal to whatever audience I was with. And like I still definitely do that to some degree, but I don't do it at the expense of who I am. What I'm coming to realize is that I'm definitely very multifaceted in that, you know, I is it multifaceted, is it malleable, whatever, like I can adjust easily to different environments, and I can thrive in a lot of different environments that, you know, just play upon different aspects of my personality. And I used to in grade school, I enjoyed it because that meant, you know, I had a lot of different friends and a lot of different, you know, social groups. But, you know, there were people who I knew were going to be super interested in, you know, what came on the Animal Planet yesterday. And there's also going to be people interested in, you know, my obsession with the Cheetah Girls. I have a lot of different niche interests, and, you know, it can be hard to find people that really get it, on all levels. But, you know, now I'm growing up, I'm an adult, I'm in different spaces. I was kind of worried that I was being mixy. You know, I felt like I was like, oh man, like how can I justify me being really into classical music in this one space and then me being really into shaking my ass in this other space and all of the things that come with
Justified.
it. So, right. And I like, who am I justifying it to? Right. Like what, who, right?
You know,
Like
you're
what
right.
even is that? So, right, exactly. I sure do. And so that was a conflict I was kind of facing. And then with all of the racial protests and things that were happening specifically in this year, and then my workspace being one that focuses directly on diversity and inclusion for, you know, to appeal to white people mostly, I was kind of like, well, damn, like, am I selling out my blackness to, like, you know, do this work to appease these people? Or, you know, do I authentically care about this information and it just happens that the population is majority white? And I've since reckoned with that.
The
And
verdict.
the conclusion I came to, the verdict is none of this shit matters. And ultimately, I'm going to do what I need to do until I can do what I want to do. And right now, what I need to do is work with these majority white people on diversity and inclusion work, anti-racism training, and yada yada yada, and blah blah blah. So I
Yeah,
can
do your
stack my
thing.
check. And right, so but that was something that I was kind of dealing with anyway. So all of that to say, I brought up, you know, feeling kind of weird showing up in certain spaces with the qualities that I possess, because I know you and I have spoken about, you in some spaces or in some conversations rather, where, you know, me and all my homegirls we can talk and we can talk and we can talk about why Clark is so great and blah blah blah. But you've shared that sometimes the qualities that we uphold for you are qualities that people oftentimes misinterpret in different ways. So you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I mean, there's a lot to tell about.
To whatever degree you're comfortable, please.
Let me try to clarify the question for myself. Do I feel comfortable being myself in every space, you mean, right? To answer your question, straight up and down, no. I do find a lot of the time I'm quite uncomfortable showing my entire self to people that I'm not very accustomed to, or in spaces that I'm just walking into. I mean, it really depends on the day sometimes. Sometimes I won't care. I'll be like, okay, I'll just, let it all hang out today. But that's a rare day. That's not common at all, I have to say, I definitely find myself effacing many, not necessarily important, but many, I guess, present parts of my identity and my background and who I am, because I'm sort of, I don't want to say I'm not proud of it all, but I think I have a little sort of, not a little, maybe a large internal fear of judgment or of disapproval, I would say. Really, we're about to go on a long diatribe. I really have to like restart my entire life for you and just give you a whole long story, right? Is
That's
that okay?
fine. We're
Take
here
the
for
time,
it.
Pastor. Well,
Yes.
it was like my freshman year of college, right? So I was sitting in the car with one of my dance teachers. I'm a dancer. I've been dancing since I was like 9. And she basically said to me after this long discussion that we were having that, Clark, you're a people pleaser. And that's where I first discovered the term people pleaser that I was using before. And I'm like, Allison, what do you mean? And I certainly get in my house and I look up what a people pleaser is. And sure enough, I fit the entire bill. And this is like 2016, so this ain't necessarily me no more. You know what I mean? But somebody who is, I don't want to use the word pathologically because I don't know what that word means, but I'm going to say pathologically scared of losing the approval of outsiders or of being judged by other people, not really able to deal with conflict well, very low self-esteem, and sort of always bending over backwards to keep the approval of outsiders, even, people who don't necessarily matter to them, like, and you care about taking care of others more than you care about focusing on yourself. Like that applied to me because I grew up in a household. We're going to put my business out in the street here, specifically your street listener. So, anyway, I grew up in a household that was a little bit turbulent. My mother ain't do shit wrong. it wasn't her fault, but basically my father, he was an extremely critical type of parent. He was a bit of a narcissist himself. He was struggling with his own health problems, addiction, what have you, but just an extremely kind of critical parent who said some shit to kids that you should never say. Saying things to young boys that sort of insult or undermine their intelligence, their value, even their masculinity as you're sort of raising them into whatever gender role. Just some shit that sort of makes you feel like, damn, am I not doing enough? Like even going as far as like comparing me and my brother to other kids that we were around, like, oh, why aren't you this, that, and the third, like this kid over here? I'm like, God damn, motherfucker. I ain't say that back then. Back then, I'll be like, oh, okay. Let me try to please my father. Let me try to do what I gotta do to I guess keep his approval. And on top of that, there were definitely a lot of conflicts, collisions going on in my household. And they were this is coming from, I came to this conclusion a long time ago. Going on, right? And these fights essentially, they scared the shit out of me as a kid, obviously, because I always thought they would lead to me losing something. They would lead to me losing my house, I guess, or to me losing my family unit, to me losing some kind of security, right? And so I would do things within my household, whether physically, verbally, or like fucking telepathically, wishing on it, I guess, to sort of prevent conflicts from happening. And like, I went to therapy all throughout high school. Like, my therapist was telling me, Clark, you are the placator. And there's this, like, not construct, what's the word? They have some sort of model of families in which there's an addict, and there are various roles everybody plays. And sometimes you have a kid who's called the placator or the enabler, who's really about keeping the peace, even if it's at the cost of enabling, the addicted parent. So those childhood experiences definitely caused me to have a lack of affirmation from one of, I guess, the most important man in my life, one, and two, an excessively high fear of conflict and an aversion to conflict. So I was growing up like that, and it totally made sense that I would, develop people-pleasing tendencies as an adult. So as I learned this, and this was definitely that year, freshman year of college, that was just like when I had this epiphany about my life, and I began to learn about, well, a little bit about psychology, not that I was studying it, academically, but more about psychology and mental illnesses and what abuse looks like. There's such a thing as psychological abuse and not just sexual or physical. And psychological abuse is just as bad, really, just as damages. And I began to learn about the concept of intergenerational trauma, as in, your grandmother has dealt with terrible things in her life, and she hasn't resolved those in positive ways, and that's like showing up in her personality. And so she winds up mistreating her children, who are your parents, and they sort of repeat that cycle, and they wind up mistreating you. So I went through that realization all throughout my freshman year of college, and I began to sort of implement changes into my life to, I guess, get out of whatever bad habits, right? So that was a whole bunch of context, but now I'm going to bring up specific examples. Did I feel comfortable being my
Okay.
whole self in every space? Absolutely not. Was I fighting myself to be as, I guess, forcing myself to be as comfortable as possible, even if I wasn't being myself in whatever space? Yes. And did that cause me a lot of sort of turbulence and turmoil on the inside? Yeah, it was fucking scary. Like you said, here's one example. Like you said before, I do love Janet. Janet's like my fucking favorite artist ever. You know what I mean? I remember one time freshman year. I was we had these. I'm not gonna say what school we went to because, but we had these dorms in our shit. We lived in dorms, right? And we had these floor plans that were like six rooms around the common room and two people to a room, so like 12 people in one sort of suite, right? And it was like 4 in the morning or 3 in the morning one night, right? And I was like, okay, I think I would like to watch my DVD of the All For You tour right now, right? Because I was fucking 19, and I'm like, I'm staying up all night because I have the energy to stay up all night. I want to see the All For You tour. I want to be entertained. And all my suite mates were outside because, well, basically they were smoking, and like you couldn't smoke inside the dorm, like the what the RAs, they were not that they were cops or anything, but they were purveyors of justice, okay? But anyway, but I did not want to, smoke or drink in college because I had one parent who was an addict, and that caused this, that, and the third problem. And I'm like, fuck this, I'm never gonna, you know what I mean? So I was like the only one who wouldn't be outside, right? And I was watching the All For You tour. And they came back in one night while I was watching the All For You tour. And we was like right in the middle of fucking the opening, getting to like Trust to Try. And to tell you the truth, they just wanted to like get on the TV. There was a TV in the common room. I'm missing that part. They just wanted to get on the TV and fucking play, Xbox or some shit. I haven't ever really played video games. So I don't even know what console was there, but they want to fucking play something. And I'm like, bro, I was here first. I want to see the All For You tour. And they're like, bro, we want to use the Xbox or whatever. But anyway, we have 12 male individuals sort of sitting around me on these couches as I'm in the center just enjoying, Trust to Try, right? And this is jarring for me. This is jarring for me, right? I'm laughing and I'm giggling, but this is very serious. But fuck it though. After you've gone through a whole childhood of sort of being insulted by the most important man in your life, supposedly not masculine you are, or being congratulated for being more masculine than your brother who's too effeminate, supposedly, right? It sort of created a complex within me about doing whatever was feminine and not being perceived as too feminine. And yeah, basically. And I don't know what happened. I've basically always listened to mostly women as far as music went. So I've been insecure about that. If people ever come up to me and ask me, who do I listen to? I'll always start with Prince and the male artists, even though, I mean, I like Janet much more than Prince, even though I love Prince, right? If somebody ever asked me like my top five, rappers, Nas and Biggie are in the top five, definitely, but they're not my top, favorite fucking hip hop artists of all time. My favorite hip hop artist ever is definitely Missy Elliott. You know what I mean? but I'm not going to start with Missy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start with like Nas, you know? So that's just one example of me sort of effacing a part of myself because I've been sort of trained to believe there's something wrong with me, or I've been critiqued in a way that was unreasonable for most of my life. And so having a bunch of men around me sort of watch me do something that I kept to myself because I was scared, oh, this looks too effeminate on me. It was very, it was not a fun experience. And when I finally said, fuck it, y'all can watch the, you know, play the Xbox, I'm gonna just go in my room. It definitely felt very weird for me. So that was one time when I was not comfortable being my entire self in a space. That definitely took me 5 minutes to say, but I have like another example. Oh my gosh. Let's share, okay?
Please share.
I guess I
preach, preacher.
Another example as far as, you know, masculinity and gender roles go is, you know, I've said before that I'm a dancer. There was one time last year where another dance teacher of mine was like, hey, I want you to come be in this show. And it was like more of a contemporary ballet type of style of dance. And I'm not really that good at all that, but I was practicing. So I would go to the gym, right? And I would, you know, go in the little studio they have with the mirrors and shit. And I would just, you know, do my thing and practice because I wanted to be good for the show, right? And the show was a mess. But anyway, I wanted to be good. Now, that is another thing that I've felt a little bit insecure about, you know, the fact that I danced ballet. And even within dance, Zanaya, you know, I've had teachers straight up say, yo, Clark, you're not dancing masculine enough. And like, we would be fucking doing ballet. And I'm just like, well, what's going on? And, you know, it goes even further. You know, I was really scrawny at age 14. And, you know, all of our female dance counterparts, you know, who are from our ethnic backgrounds were not any version of scrawny, if you know what I mean, right? And so we would have to lift them and shit. And, you know, my little ass, I couldn't fucking lift them. And that made me feel, you know, emasculated as well. So, I mean, there's a whole fucking journey of not feeling like enough of a man through dance, but also feeling like a whole lot of a man through dance, because I think dance class was the only time I really had a male that I look up to affirm me as a male and as a talented person. But anyway, I was in the gym last year. And guess who the fuck walks in? Bernice Burgos. You know who Bernice Burgos is? Okay, she is one of the most beautiful women on the planet, in my opinion, I have to say. She is just perfect, and we're going to leave it at that. But anyway, she walked in with not her bodyguard, but like her bouncer. No, her friend. Her friend who was like training her. And her friend used to be a bouncer, basically, they told us, because they were very friendly individuals who, you know, struck up a conversation with me for whatever reason, which is fine. I love Bernice. I still have a picture. Oh, thank you.
Probably because he's so handsome.
No, fuck it. But anyway.
Sorry, continue.
I was over there, you know, practicing ballet. And we have this huge, huge male over there, you know, with Bernice Burgos. And, you know, I'm already sort of trying to suppress that insecurity right there. Like, okay, you know, and not size myself up to another individual. But then, you know, he's telling Bernice the story about how he used to be a bouncer and how, you know, when you're a bouncer, you're not supposed to fight people who are being belligerent on the line to get into the party. You're supposed to just restrain them, you know, and if you fight the people, you're stupid, right? So basically, because they felt friendly enough with me, you know, over in my corner, he comes over and asks me, hey, sir, can I like practice like a headlock on you? Like, can I demonstrate to Bernice, my friend here, like how I would like do these guys who, you know, I had to restrain in the club? And of course, I'm yes, of course, anything for Bernice Burgos, right? So basically, so this huge Aki nigga puts me in a headlock, right? And look, I consented to this. I consented to this. And he does it again later, which I consented again in a different way, because he was just. But, you know, I was considerably smaller than him. I was doing something that I was, you know, insecure about. And I was in front of, you know, a woman, you know, who's extremely attractive. And so that made me feel 80 different motherfucking types of ways. That made me feel like, oh, gosh, you know, I was already so uncomfortable, you know, practicing dance in front, you know, in sort of inside of the studio in front of other people. But that made me even less comfortable doing it. You know what I mean? I have a whole lot of unresolved insecurities just sort of laying around my brain. I've been going off for a minute, right? But there's more.
I mean, but that's what this is all about.
Anyway, you know, that's those are, I guess, two examples of when I felt uncomfortable being my whole self because, you know, I guess I was harassed about my fucking gender presentation when I was a child. But another way, you know, apart from that whole topic, is again, being myself on Twitter and saying what I really think on Twitter. Again, I'm not into conflict. I really don't have a good relationship with conflict, and I sort of hate pissing people off and having their disapproval. But at the same time, I'm always pushing myself to speak my mind, even if I fear that disapproval, because I want to break myself out of being a people pleaser. So that's just a whole bunch of fucking. I drink some water. I'm sorry. I needed to. That's a whole bunch of fucking fighting inside of my head right there. But one great example in the last year, I'm sure as everybody has witnessed, has been my love affair with Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, right? Right. So in general, I have a huge grievance, a huge pet peeve with Twitter. Black Twitter, you know, and don't drag me. I mean, drag me if you want to. I really don't give a fuck at this point. I really don't care. But do I not give a fuck, or am I trying to train myself to not give a fuck? That's the question. But I mean, around last year, you know, they was pushing that fucking false fucking narrative about my mother. She looks exactly like my mother. That, just some fallacious, philanderous type of, just nonsense, right? And I believed it all. I believe it all. When they say she locked up thousands of black men for weed, I believed it. I'm like, okay. I was calling her convict Amala, gotta catch Amala if you don't. I had names and everything. You know, and then I ran into some of her black supporters, and then they put me onto the truth that, when she was a district attorney, she launched like the first anti-recidivism program ever in the United States, in which, somebody who's convicted for a low-level drug crime, we're not going to give you jail time. We're going to put you in this program where you can get a job and go to school and get help paying your child support and all that. And once you pass through the program, your charges are gone. You know what I mean? Then they put me onto the facts that, the amount of people getting arrested and imprisoned for marijuana dropped considerably. Every year she was the attorney general in California, even though attorney generals don't even fucking prosecute low-level marijuana cases, right? So I was learning the truth about a figure. And the position that puts me in is, constantly on the timeline every day, showing my support for a figure who was widely disliked, at least in my circle, right? And my pet peeve with Black Twitter is that there is a lot of demonstration and performance of pro-blackness, but there's not a whole lot of education or research that goes under it. What we have is a, and this is my opinion, y'all don't have to agree, and you don't have to agree, Zaniah, but there's a lot of people who's going to get on there and say something that's a little bit extreme, or maybe some shit that's not even true. And they say it waving their fist in the air because it feels and sounds pro-black to them. And my issue is, whatever they said may not have been true. They did not take the time out to research the topic clearly. They don't care enough about it, to do the research or to actually make changes in the area that they're talking about. So they're just talking shit on the internet to make themselves look good or feel good, obviously, right? That's what's going on, clearly. That's happened with, as far as pushing false narratives, right? This happened with Kamala Harris. That happened with the discussion regarding country music last year. I'm not even gonna go there. But basically, I was scared every day, that I was going to lose some followers. Evidently, I did not lose really any followers that I cared about, but, I was sort of logging in every day, just getting ready to send my Kamala tweets because I felt very passionate about that, right? But also scared, like, damn, I know this person doesn't like her and this person doesn't really know the truth. Are they about to fucking block me? Are they gonna mute me? What's going on? So Twitter's a big place where I'm constantly trying to be myself or forcing myself to be honest about who I am and what I think, but consistently feeling very not at ease about it. So I guess that's it. It's been 10, 15 minutes of me straight talking. Does that answer your question? I hope it does.
It sure do. No, you did a great job. First of all, I like listening to you speak, and I hope the people that are listening enjoy it too. So that was really just a treat for all of us. 15 minutes of uninterrupted Clark. So no, you answered the question very well, and I appreciate your examples. Because it there are a wide variety of examples, but again, they're specific to you and your own experience. And so I think you did a great job of sharing why certain things irk you the way that they do. And one thing I will say is, I say this to my friends all the time because,
Right.
we're young. We are young people. We're not the youngest people on the planet, obviously, but we are young people. We are in the majority, we're like in our early mid-20s. And the fact, even just now, you said that you were kind of able to identify, or someone identified to you, someone told you you were a people pleaser. You went home and like looked it up to see, what's this all about? And you did that. That's a level of introspection that I always tell my homegirls, people don't really get into
Oh.
this until way later in the game. They don't start looking at their habits. They don't, take self audits of their lives and see, what's working, what's not, what's making me happy, what's not. Some people don't do it at all, but when you usually hear about it, when you see it happening, it usually comes after somebody like, you just went through a divorce to your partner of the last 20 plus years, or you just lost your job after working there for 30 years, or whatever the case. Like, it's like very rarely young people just having a conversation for the sake of trying to do better for themselves. And so, obviously, like, not saying that you haven't gone through things, because you have, you just shared that. But the fact that you're still able at such an early stage in your life, sit down and be like, all right, why do I feel this way? Where does this come from? Is there anything that I can do to address it? And what are the next steps looking like? So I do want to give you a shout out for that, and encourage anybody else who's listening, like, if you don't already take time to ask yourself the hard questions about you, and essentially help you become the best version of yourself, then I would encourage you to do so.
Wow. Oh
As
no.
far
Right.
as
Well,
talk,
if I may
right?
interject, it's I feel a little bit
Please.
like, well, you did ask that question, but maybe, I mean, I feel like if a good answer, but a little caveat to everything is, it's an ongoing issue. It's one that I'm still like fighting to resolve. You know what I mean? I'm in therapy now, and I let him know all this and way more. Many more dark, terrible things about my private life, but it's a thing that I'm actively working on resolving. And I think just having the courage to be yourself, even if you're scared to be yourself, and to like what you like and say what you mean in the face of others, that's a big step for anyone to take, and it's a big step I took. But there's definitely more to do. I definitely have to work on liking myself enough and getting affirmation from somewhere secure, like God. Not my fucking father, and using that affirmation to I guess destroy my fear of losing the approval of others. I don't need unimportant approval if I have important approval. You know what I mean? So just to bookend that long statement. But what were you saying?
Period. No, I mean, so, and to that point, what I'm saying is, all of this type, this whole conversation is an ongoing conversation. And if you do it right, you're supposed to do this for yourself, to yourself, whatever, for the rest of your life. And so, why I'm excited, or why I'm, giving you props, is because people don't even take those initial steps until they are well into their lives, into their careers, into their marriages, into just life in general. They maybe ask the questions to themselves, but they don't really do anything about it, and they just kind of suffer in silence for a very good portion of their lives, just kind of being like, damn, like, why do I feel this way? Why am I like this? And they don't actively search for answers until something, really dramatic leads them to doing so. And so, again, the fact that you were in therapy, are pursuing these answers, are doing research on these things, that's very significant. And I like to shout out my people when they do that, because it's not easy work. And yes, to your point, it's ongoing. This is not an end all be all. This is not putting this to bed at all. No, but I think it's really great that, people are having these thoughts and these conversations a little bit earlier in life. Just not even because, like, not to be like, oh, you're getting ahead of the curve. No, but like, it's just good to do it, especially in your early mid-20s. These are a different set of formative years for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. And so if you can like ask these types of tough questions and even see some kind of results to asking these questions at this stage in life, I'm of the mind that it, all but guarantees you continuing to move in just like in an upward
Oh,
trajectory as
yes.
you go
Well,
on in life,
pray.
generally.
Praise
So,
belongs
and
to
that,
God.
so that that's
Well, I received those
that's what I'm
compliments
getting
totally,
at.
but I have to
Yes,
say,
period.
I wouldn't have done it actually if I would not have gone on this journey of introspection without, a series of life events happening, like that teacher sitting down with me and having that conversation, and also me running into this one book that completely changed my life called Black Pain that was written by Terry Williams. And the main point of Black Pain was you have to deal with your problems, and if you don't deal with them, they're going to deal with you. You can't run away from your pain. This is a lyric from a Janet song. You can't run from your pain. Wherever you run, there you will be, right? So that book sort of put me onto the concept of basically your emotional turmoil is going to chase you down until you address where it's coming from. And if you don't deal with it, those pent-up feelings are just going to bust themselves out in the form of some kind of negative, maladaptive behavior in your life. So it was really a book and a person sort of what's the word here? I guess encouraging me to begin a process of introspection and healing. So this was not all on my own accord. I won't take all the credit. I'll just take some of it. But yes, thank you, Zaniah. Yes.
The point is that you
Should I have
followed
started?
through on these little indicators, you know.
Yeah.
R no, right, and that's what I'm saying. Again, someone could say, Clark, you're a
It
people
is what it
pleaser. You could have
is.
been like, oh, that's just who I am, and just continue to just do that and just be sad. So, whatever the catalyst was, there's a level of accountability that us as individuals have to take in order to kind of keep that ball rolling. And you have kept the ball rolling. So that is what I'm saying to you, and I thank you for your answers. So in the spirit of self-accountability, in the spirit of us continuing to grow and develop, my final targeted question to you for you is, what can you do to improve? You mentioned, you said you don't care if people drag you on Twitter, but then you asked if you actually didn't care if you're just training yourself not to care, and I thought that was really funny. But just like in general, for the goals that you have set for yourself, for who you are, what can you do to do better? And or what would you encourage others to do in order to improve
Well, what I've encouraged
themselves in
myself to
this
do over
way?
the last few years, and what I've been encouraging a couple of my friends to do within the last 1 year, I'm going to say, is acknowledge your own rights. You have rights as a person. You have the right to exist. You have the right to be. You have the right to think. You have the right to feel. You have the right to whatever you feel. Okay. And you have the right to do whatever you want as long as you're not hurting somebody else. So I would say having a sort of my rights mindset definitely helps because, you have a right to not be uncomfortable. You have a right to not suffer abuse or to be in a situation that consistently makes you unhappy. As far as not just people pleasing, but as far as putting up with a negativity from others goes, it's because you don't feel like you have the right to tell them no, or you don't feel that you have the right to step out of that situation. You do. And you must acknowledge that and take hold of that and completely walk in it. 1000%. And that's a thing that I'm trying to teach myself every day. I have the right to feel the way that I do and say it. And also, I guess to be aware of the risks that come with being yourself, that come with I don't know, being unique. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you may lose somebody's approval for however whatever you think, do, say, or feel. You may lose people's approval for who you are. Not everyone's going to like you. In fact, some people may straight up hate you and be annoyed by you or whatever. Some people may want to hurt you, but that's the nature of this life. You're always going to be facing opposition. Would you like to face opposition, in a life of being who others would prefer you to be, or who the person that other people have instructed you to be? Or do you want to face opposition for being who you really are and who you would like to be, because you're gonna face some opposition either way. You know what I mean? So I guess count the cost of being yourself and count the cost of being loud-mouthed about your thoughts, but still do it because it's worth it. It's completely worth it. A big theme over like the last 5 years was self-validation. What does self-validation mean? I'm good. I'm a good person. Me and that which I am essentially is okay and acceptable and God ordained. You know, this is not everybody has the same spiritual beliefs, of course, and I'm tolerant of everybody else's. But definitely my own beliefs were a big part of it. You know, it had a lot to do with me saying, Clark, those of you, you know, God loves you. You know, God would break off a piece of himself and die for you. You know what I mean? So you don't need the approval of others, right? Mm-hmm. You need to be able to say of yourself that you are good, you're acceptable, and you're worthy, and you're valuable. And if you need somebody else to say that of you, you need to know that God says it, right? So that's self-validation. What else? Oh, I guess just being surrounded by people who affirm you in a positive way, who don't, you know, not yes people who are just going to lie to you like everything you do is fucking perfect. You know, be around some reasonable people who's going to tell you the truth about yourself, but people who celebrate who you are, you know, stick around them. I'm very, very blessed to be surrounded by a bunch of people who celebrate me and look at me as like a fucking ball of sunshine. That is not a thing everybody has. And I don't take that for granted at all. Like, that's a wonderful thing. So I guess those are some life tips. I'm nobody's life coach. I'm just telling y'all what I did. You know what I mean? And also, straight up, get on the internet, basically. WikiHow, I'm not going to lie to you. I got on WikiHow a couple of times. Like, how do I feel better about myself? How do I practice self-validation? And they, not just WikiHow, but I mean Google. I mean, when I say Google, I'm being a shithead. I'm being silly and ridiculous. But I mean, research. Do the necessary work, which includes research of learning about yourself, who you are, where your problems came from, how they might have arisen in your childhood and in your household. Really get to the bottom of whatever's bothering you and figure out what you can do about it. And that involves you studying, learning, thinking, and working. And you should do it. You owe it to yourself to get that done. So that's it. I did it. You can do it. You should do it. Thou shalt. Okay. All right.
Hey.
Okay.
Beautiful. I love that. Thank you. That was my final targeted question to you. And then I was going to ask you if you had anything left to just give the people. But I like what you just finished saying. So I'm not going to give you any overkill. But Clark, yeah. You're here on the Catch Some Z's podcast. In the context of our conversation here, is there anything that you want me to address or just anything else that you want to say? Let me think.
I'd like to come back in the future. You know, I feel like this is my first time really doing like a recorded sort of interview. Well, it's not. I mean, I've done this before, but I mean, I felt a little bit nervous. I just want to listen back to it and make sure I liked it, you know? anything else I would want you to address? I think you addressed it all. Let me just say, Zanaya is a phenomenal person. I've known her for like something like 11 years at this stage in the game. She's smart. Well, she's incredibly intelligent. She's extremely talented. And she has a huge future ahead of her. And I've always seen that in her. You know, she's just a powerful person. She's one of many women, many Black women in my life whom I just look up to as, wow, so powerful. You know, wonderful. Let me be like them. You know what I mean? So you're great. That's all I would say you need to address. Yeah.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me, Clark. You hear that, folks? I'm mm-hmm. coming for you. No, thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Usually, I think since we've got a good amount of content here, I mm-hmm. would try to wrap up with an inspiring quote. Except for that, I did not source one for this episode sure, because okay. I figured that you were going to have some gems, which you did. But I want to leave our listeners with just with something fun.
Honestly,
something inspiring,
you know,
a little silly.
Stream Twinkie Clark, I gotta say, I've been getting into gospel music, bro. I mean, I've always liked it, but you know, Stream Twinkie Clark, Stream LaShawn Pace, Walter Hawkins, stream that shit. You don't need to listen to that damn rap music. Yeah, that's basically it. You know, that's all I need to know.
Okay, so you
okay,
heard it
Walter
here first,
Hawkins,
folks.
Pace,
Stream Twinkie
okay.
Clark, period. Clark said that there is a bomb in Gilead.
Did. But yeah, thank you for having me. You know, thank you for always thank you, Zanaya. You know, I'm really shocked. I mean, as positive as the things that people always say of me to me are, I'm always very shocked when they say them. Thank you for having a high view of me and constantly sharing that with me. Thank you for affirming me. You know, my friends give me a lot of affirmations, so I like that. But I guess I need to find some of my own from within myself and from Jesus, right? But thank you for that which you give me. I really appreciate it. Okay.
Of course.
Okay.
You make it so easy.
Okay.
Okay. I think we're done here. Clark, once again, I want to thank you for joining me on Catch Some Z's podcast. I know that you were incredibly excited to do this, and I kept you waiting long enough. So you finally made it here. I think we had a pretty good time. I think our listeners are going to have a pretty good time, and I can't wait to put your beautiful, handsome face on my Instagram and slut you out a little bit for some likes, comments, and engagement. So I appreciate you, and you won't be a stranger. I'm sure I'll have you back again.
I'll think of some useful
for
things
other
to
conversations
say.
For other things in general. But yes, you will have some useful things to say. But I think this is where I'm going to leave it here, folks. So thank you all for tuning in again. And I will be back in 3 weeks' time with another episode to wrap up this year. Wait a minute. 3 weeks. Let's do some math.
Yeah, it's going to be 2021. Fucking finally.
2020, right? Oh damn, wow, perfect. So New Year's episode is gonna, not New Year's Day, but the next episode you hear from me will be in the year 2021, and after this episode airs, we will be less than a week out from
praise.
The 2 year anniversary of Catch Some Z's podcast being live. So hey, you know, so Clark, thank you for being here for the last episode of 2020, and the last episode before the 2 year celebration. This is all very powerful stuff happening right now. So thank you again for your participation, for your presence, for your words of wisdom, for your immaculate storytelling.
We just said bye like 5 times, huh? Yeah, we're going to piss our kids off in the future, you know, trying to
we like black
leave
people.
The place.
You know how it goes.
I'm never going to leave. But yeah, I'm going to see you back at the ranch, okay?
Okay. Yes, you will. Solid. Back at the ranch.
Okay, finish.